Welcome to Mortally Wounded Podcast, episode 60. I'm your host, James.
And I am your host, Chris. It's been a while, James. What's going on?
Oh, just a few things, you know. No, not too much, really. No, we've just, for people who aren't regular listeners, my wife and I, Sammy, we've just had a baby recently, just in early Feb. So I've been off work. Baby is now about 7 weeks old, just over 7 weeks old now. So very much in our little baby bubble. Had some time off work and everything. So we're just, yeah, focusing in and just getting into that rhythm of like 3 to 4 hourly feeds, crying, nappies, all that good stuff. But yeah, she's amazing. This little bundle of joy. She's definitely stolen our hearts, changed our lives forever. Very, very happy to be a dad. Something I've wanted to be for a while. And yeah, it's just been amazing. So yeah, that's kind of a little bit of explanation wise. We haven't really hit the record button for the podcast probably since just after Christmas.
No, yeah. Yeah, it was just basically the New Year's episode.
Yeah, so it's a long time between drinks, but I think we've got a pretty good excuse. But now we haven't had a chance to catch up for just for hobby chats, and we haven't talked about CanCon, and of course we've already started organizing slaughter, so slaughter's on the way. So it's kind of all still happening in the background, but yeah, my focus has definitely been being a dad and a newborn baby, so
it's awesome. It's great to see you guys happy, and with a new addition to the family and everything. So I'm glad to hear it's going well, and you can see on your face sort of how happy you are, and as you say, sort of it changes you for sure. Adjusted to the sleep and into the routine by now, sort of 7 weeks in, so that's good.
It's kind of like we're kind of very we're happy if we get like 3 hours in a row at the moment. But there's been a few nights where she slept 5 hours, 4 hours, like, so we're getting little bursts of glory here and there. But it's all worth it. Just that little smile, she's starting to come out of her shell a little bit, so she's getting that to that stage where she's starting to get more interactive, smiling, sort of baby talk and all that kind of stuff starting to come through. And yeah, guys listening with little ones have been through a similar experience or the same experience will can attest that it's a very special time. Very, very happy about it. But I'm just going to ramble off because I'm actually quite tired now as well.
When was she last up?
She's been asleep this afternoon. She normally has a bit of a snooze, like in between feeds, and so we've just fed her, and we'll try and put her to bed now. So Sammy's very graciously released me to record podcasts for a few hours. She's been amazing. Sammy's been incredible throughout the whole thing with the birth. From birth, carrying the baby, everything, like, it's insane. Just being witness to how incredible she's been throughout it all. The human body is capable of some amazing things, and I'm forever humbled and changed because of it. She's been amazing, and very happy little family at the moment. So I won't have to go back to work until about 22nd of April. So I've still got about three or 4 weeks left, I think. Till I have to go back to work. But I'll be doing a bit of working from home and stuff in the lead up just to kind of ease back into things. But pretty much going to be at home still for a bit longer. So pretty happy about that.
Yeah, no, that's great. I'm enjoying, just the last 3 days of Easter holidays. It's been a very busy 5 or 6 weeks for me for work. So I've been sort of working Saturday and Sunday for the last 5 weeks in a row. So I've been I've done 35 days straight, I think, leading into this. So I needed this this long weekend to just kind of chill out and have some time to do some hobby. And perfect timing. My new 3D printer turned up on Thursday just before the long weekend. So
awesome.
I got to clean up the old one, ready to kind of sell that, and then set up the new one, and After a couple of sort of prints and working out sort of optimal settings and again doing some more reading to make sure that I really get things right this time, I think I've kind of found my groove now, and I've been no fails and spending more time in the sort of slicing software. And Geordie came over the other day for the afternoon for a bit of a hobby session, and he sort of talked me through a bit of how he looks for things in the slicing software, which I've read stuff and I've like watched some YouTube videos, so I understood the concept, but having someone kind of live go through it with an actual example on the screen and being like, no, I would rotate that a little bit more because you want this pointing upwards, and then because that one is going to be pointing down, you want to go into the edit the supports and add a little extra support there. And
Oh, wow.
it was really helpful because Geordie was like,
Okay. Yeah.
oh, I almost never have any prints fail. And I was like, really? I have so many prints fail. Like, and I use pre I'm like, and I use like pre-supported files and everything that have been done. And he's like, nah, never use the pre-supported things. They're always rubbish. So it's kind of changed everything I do now. So I used to just download the supported versions of files and use those. But now I'm downloading all the non-supported versions, and I'm sort of using the software itself to generate all the supports and doing all the kind of hollowing and putting in the drain holes, and then going through level by level and looking at where I can add in additional supports and playing with all the settings of the exposure time and all that jazz. And
Yeah.
because this printer's got like super high speed mode and stuff, I haven't tested the full high speed because you need special resin for that, which I don't have yet. But even with my normal resin, you can do sort of speed mode. And it's working great. It's a dream. Like
Awesome.
it's the Anycubic M5S Pro. So it's the first printer that's just come out that's got auto leveling as well, which is for me the main reason I bought it, because I couldn't stand the bed leveling process on the old printer. It always used to give me the shits. So just being able to be like, we don't do that here. Just press go, and you just watch it sort of, you just watch it sort itself out, has been amazing. And
Of a game changer.
Yeah, it really has. And like, it's a massive screen size, and I just can't believe how quick the technology has come along, even in the year since I bought my other one. It's sort of come on. They've probably released four or five newer printers in just over a year since I bought that last one, which is bonkers. But yeah, so that's good. I've been back on the 3D print train, sort of getting awards and stuff ready for Sydney Slaughter this year, and that I just had my first print of a new fun sort of, not well, yeah, it's definitely a concept army, a new sort of alternate army that I'm going to print very quickly. Put that first print on. It's a massive print, and it took under 2 hours, and the quality looks great. So I'm pretty happy about that. I'll be able to smash this out in no time. So it's been
Awesome.
good. It's been good to have, yeah, 3 days to sort of just sit in my hobby room and not worry about work and do stuff. So
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
I bet you're missing hobby at the moment.
Yeah, like I've in the lead up to the birth and everything, we did some shifting around the house, so I've moved. My hobby room has now become the guest room slash office, and all my hobby gear and stuff has gone out into the shed. So I've set up this new setup in the battle shed out the back. It's all very cozy out there. It looks amazing. It feels good when I'm in there, but I haven't actually got to the point where I've sat down and just started getting some stuff done. So I've got a few things on the table. I've got my Mantic Armada ships are on the table. But I did sort of splurge a little bit recently and got all the Dawnbringers books to catch up on the lore. For the latest stuff that's happening with AOS, and I did get the Fangs of the Blood Queen box as well. So I think I'll be hopefully cracking into that box just to sort of wet the whistle and just go back to just painting my Vendrak scheme. So with the oils and enamels, it's pretty low effort, I guess you could say. Like, just something just to, as a palate cleanser to try and get back into it. But I haven't actually. I was thinking about the other day, I think just with the big changes happening in our life, pregnancy and everything, and just hobby time for me has really gone by the wayside. I have been gaming a little bit, at Games Days. And I think the last actual game of Age of Sigmar I played was at Bloodright, November last year. So I haven't actually had a game of AOS since then. I might have had one, maybe one or two. I can't remember it at the moment. Definitely haven't had a game this year since then. So and it's probably been a good 7 months or so since I've actually painted something. So very much like kind of feel quite disconnected from hobby and not so much gaming, because I did get to the still organizing the Golden Gamers Guild Games Days here in G-Town in hometown Goulburn. So I did get to the last one for a few hours, and it's good to catch up and have a chat and everything. So we've actually got some new players coming along, which is great. I think the Warhammer the Old Worlds brought some people out of the woodwork locally. Mm-hmm. So there's actually a fledgling Old World scene starting to develop in Goulburn. So it's helped push me into rebasing on my Bretonians. So
Bretonians are coming back.
Yeah, Bretonians are back. I never did rebase them from their squares, but I've got to rebase them anyway into bigger squares now. So, so the irony is still there, but at least I have to rebase. At least I didn't rebase them twice, I guess. I've got a fully painted Bret army just ready to rumble. So I've got a friend, a local friend, Kristen, is very graciously printing off me a stack of, like, on his 3D printer, a stack of bases, little holes for the magnets. And I went to minimagtray.com and just bought a bunch of those mini mag trays. I don't know if you've seen those before. They're kind of like the little handles on the back, and it's a little magnetized sheet.
It's like a little thing that you can lift up.
So I thought, rather than going through and creating a whole bunch of new movement trays and stuff, I'll try them out. So they got good reviews and everything. So I know Plastic Crack guys were raving about them, and Brent recommended them as well. So I just thought I'd get onto that, and make it a bit easier. Waiting for my bases to arrive, and then that'll be the goal, is to try and get as much of that rebased in time for next Games Day, which is 20th of April, so a couple of weeks. So hopefully get them soon. I'll sort of be aiming to get the Bretts on the table for the next Games Day.
That'd be cool.
Definitely feeling the itch to get some Age of Sigmar happening as well. But it's just, it's hard to find the time at the moment, but it's starting to feel like we're kind of getting into a bit more of a rhythm with things with the baby. I'm starting to feel like, okay, maybe I could schedule in some game time, and Sam's supportive of that. So I just got to put the feelers out and get someone over and just roll some dice and out in the shed. And that'll help wet the whistle. But in the background, just reading the Old World rule book. Got myself a copy. I haven't downloaded, or haven't got the PDF versions or the e-versions of the Arcanum, the Bretonian Arcanum book and the Forces of Fantasy book. So I'm waiting for those to come back in stock to get myself physical copies. But I'll probably end up just getting the PDF copies as well. So I've just been kind of reading through that and trying to get over and read back on all the Dawnbringers stuff as well. So kind of like keeping it going through reading the lore and some of the rules and stuff like that. So it's kind of been my hobby at the moment. It's more just reading and keeping in, sort of trying to keep a bit of a finger on the pulse of what's going on, especially with the new edition coming out soon. Starting to tease all that out on Warhammer Community. So looks like some interesting changes afoot. Got to catch up on some reading on the last couple of days of articles. I haven't had a chance to read yet, but it looks like there's some things around priority and a modular approach to the rules, and it all looks very interesting. I'm open, sounds cool. New editions are always good, always going to ruffle feathers, but end of the day, just wait till it's all laid out and we can see what it's all about. I'm not too attached to the current edition, whatever. It's just a game, it's fun. I'll just roll with it in the new edition as it comes through, and what level of involvement I'll have you know, I don't know at this stage.
Yeah.
It's not definitely not going away forever. So
Yeah. I thought it was cool seeing how since the last edition and stuff, you can see that they've evolved in their like presence of stuff. Like their previous editions would have been sort of those moving almost PowerPoint style presentations with static artworks, just transitioning to another static artwork with like someone talking over the top. But obviously now they've got Warhammer TV and they've got sort of the animation studio that's done like Black Talon and everything. It was cool having like almost like a video game style trailer for
the Skaven
for the new edition. So I was like, this is actually cool. this is actually really cool getting to see that. And I think Skaven as well, a race that like a lot of people like, they're really fun. And so seeing them kind of be a release army.
They're
a range that so many models have needed a refresh for like years and years and years that like, there's going to be a lot of Skaven around.
Good. And love all the new Flesh Eater stuff that's been coming out. Those new models are awesome. A lot of, I've enjoyed watching all that come through as well. And even the new Stormcast are kind of looking cool too. Oh, yeah, Chris is holding up a, what are those ones called?
It's one of the Morpeg Knights.
Morpeg, that's it, the Morpeg Knights.
One of the other bits of recent hobby I got to do is I did build up 3 Morpeg Knights. I mean, he's talking about the new Flesh Eaters, so
Awesome. It looks awesome. Skaven, love Skaven. Even from, like, back in the fantasy days, just the craziness and the cool lore, the fantastic race. I'm excited for the OG Skaven players, and I'm sure there'll be a whole bunch of people jumping on for the new range as well. So it's going to be really cool to see what comes out. Stormcast looks incredible too. Like it almost made me go, actually, maybe now's the time to start a Stormcast army. Just do it, jump in. But I don't know. I've got too many backlog projects, you know. I can't justify it.
Other than the printing, when I said Geordie came over the other day as well, hobby-wise, he helped me sort of talk through, I want to convert a harvester for my OBR, because it's the one model in that army that I don't have, because I hate the harvester model, like I always have. I never bought it. I just can't bring myself to get it. I just think it looks really derpy for like multiple reasons. So it's just the one model I didn't have. But when the new Tomb Kings Necrolith Bone Dragon came out, I was like, that is really cool. I want that model, but also I'm not just gonna like build this big Tomb Kings dragon for the sake of it, because it's not like I'm gonna paint it up for my Tomb Kings and put them on display, because I'm not playing Old World or anything. So I saw it and was like, I'm gonna convert this into a harvester for my OBR. So I don't do kit bashing and stuff though, really. Like I do basing. Like I'm happy, like basing's my comfort area of kind of cool. I feel like I can play with resin and I can do all that stuff. But cutting models up and reposing, and I just build the kit as the kit comes. So that was kind of new territory for me, whereas Geordie doesn't really do a stock standard model for any model ever. He kind of said he'd be like happy to come around and sort of look at it and help me kind of figure out how to do it. So once we sort of had a bit of a chat, and he was like, I'd cut this off here and snip this off here, and then if you want to pose it up, probably use some basing. And I'm like, that's fine, I get the basing bits to sort of just change the angle but without changing the core body. But then I kind of went, okay. And he was like, you can bend the legs if you want, you can snip the sprue a little bit of an angle and you can bend it. And I was like, I don't think I'll do that. I was like, I can understand snipping off the vertebrae and kind of taking a section of neck and tail out and then just joining them back together again. That'll still look pretty similar. But I was like, I don't know how I feel about taking a chunk off the leg. And then in the end, I did the tail, was happy with the tail, did the neck, and I was happy with the neck. And then I was looking at one of the legs and I was like, Yeah, I don't like this angle. I want to angle it down like the actual model. One of his arms is a lot more down. So I did just snip the arm off entirely and kind of file away and create a new, like, I guess, elbow join, and then sort of fuse them back together again. And I think it looks right. So, yeah, I've actually kind of done a kit bash. I also spent the afternoon with one of the GW skull kits. You know, they did those...
The kit that's just like
sprues and sprues of skulls. And I also had a pack of skulls from like a scenic war or something, resin pack of skulls from years ago. And I just poured skulls into the inside of the dragon's rib cage and just covered it with glue, poured more skulls in, covered it with glue, poured more skulls, and basically filled the inside of this rib cage with skulls. Oh, wow. Similar to the actual sort of harvester. I think it'll be standing a lot more upright than because the normal bone dragon's hunched over forwards and it has a really long neck and a really long tail. So it wouldn't work on the harvester base because the harvester base is quite small. But now I've posed it upright and as I say, shortened the neck and massively shortened the tail. It should fit on that oval. And I'm like, cool, I'll go through my sprues and find a few of the old like Archai shoulder pads and chest plates and stuff, and I'll put some of that OBR kind of armor paneling on it, and I think that'll tie it in, and I should be good with the harvester. So that's pretty much the only model I needed for the collection, and then I'll try painting it myself as well, because my OBR was sort of commission painted by somebody else, but I reckon it's all sort of airbrushed, and I reckon I can sort of do it myself with the airbrush and get it close enough anyway. So, it's been bouncing around a bit for the hobby, which has been, which has been good. So, yeah.
Any gaming this year?
Not in person other than CanCon, which we'll get into. I played a game last night on TTS. So I've been playing a bit of TTS with Liam, just sort of playing and giving him practice for Worlds, and not that I'm probably good practice for Worlds because I'm not very good. And he's getting a lot of practice. But it's just been fun to run out sort of just crazy lists and play Nagash and play some Khorne and just all sorts. So played on TTS, but haven't played a game on the table since CanCon. So it's been a couple of months for me as well, gaming wise, but that's all good. I knew I wouldn't be with work. So starting to get back into that sort of, okay, I've got some time to hobby again, which is good.
Yeah.
But yeah. Cool. All right. Should we crack into CanCon, I guess? I know, obviously, with the bub, you weren't there, so it's sort of more me, recapping CanCon, but you were obviously involved in sort of some of the organization stuff this year, so.
Yeah, so, I was involved with, on the organization team in the background in the lead-up with Jace, Matt, and Dave Hurley as well. Matt Holt and Jason Harris. So they're kind of like, and a few other guys as well at the start. And but I think the eventual core was us sort of four. And then as it got closer, I kind of dropped off a bit as well with the baby and everything. But definitely like in some of those core sort of earlier decision making stages, was there and was able to offer advice, sort of like in a consulting, more of a consultative role. And definitely would have been there on the day in a blue shirt, helping to run everything. If it wasn't so close to the birth, so it was just way too close. It was like a week before the due date, so I couldn't commit to being there in person. But was able to get my terrain down there. So was there in spirit, definitely there in spirit. Yeah. My terrain made its appearance again, like it used to back in the day when it all first sort of started kicking off. Which was I was glad that it could be there. And show itself, but that was my involvement in the background there. Over to you, Chris. How was your experience of the weekend?
It was good. It was kind of I did the drive this year because I'd sort of wanted to do the road trip one time from Brisbane, and then Geordie sort of said he was going to be driving because of the army he was planning on taking. He couldn't sort of put it on a plane, so he was like, "I'm going to be driving down." I was like, "Okay, well, I'll drive with you if you sort of want a co-pilot." And then Scott and Nicole were sort of originally coming as well, so there was going to be kind of a crew of us all traveling down, so that was going to be fun. But then obviously, like, sort of Scott and Nicole decided they weren't going to go to CanCon this year, so it was just me and Geordie, which was fine. And it ended up working well that I'd said yes, because we ended up taking my car instead of sort of Geordie's van, which was more than adequate, just the two of us. But it was fun kind of just doing that road trip. The way down went super quick. That was sort of 12 hours, I think, door to door. So we sort of left at 5:30 in the morning and got there sort of 7 p.m. I think, with the time difference and everything. And I'd got an audiobook ready for us to listen to, thinking like, oh, we'll chat for an hour or whatever, and then once the sort of chat dies down, we can just chuck on an audiobook. But I put it on, and within like 2 minutes, we obviously sort of weren't listening to it because we were still talking. And then we just chatted the whole way. So it went really,
Oh,
really quick.
awesome.
It went really quick, which was good.
Yeah.
And then yeah, kind of hung out, had an Airbnb with Liam and another guy, Jasper, from sort of Sydney.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was nice. Sort of cruisy day, and chilled out. And then yeah, we had CanCon. So I think it was sort of 180 people in the end. So not quite the sort of 220-ish numbers that they had been before, but also for the first year with kind of new organizers and a bit of uncertainty, 180 was great, and it still felt very much like kind of the CanCons of old.
Oh, definitely.
We were in a different hall for the first time this year, though. So we weren't kind of down the end, but honestly, it probably felt better in this hall that we were in. Like, it felt like we had more space, and it definitely didn't feel as hot. I think it was a weather thing, though. This year was sort of, CanCon seems to alternate between the 40 plus degree years and then kind of a 23, 24 degree year. And this was the sort of 24 degrees, so it was quite nice. And yeah, it didn't feel kind of crowded, but it also didn't feel empty. You're still walking through lots and lots of tables and stuff to kind of get to where you need to go. But yeah, from a kind of overarching perspective, like from my side, it ran really smoothly. Like, I didn't have any issues with software. It wasn't like waiting on pairings. Didn't I certainly wasn't aware of any dramas or anything like that that kind of happened over the weekend. So from like my thoughts on the whole kind of event, it went really smoothly. Obviously, it had the kind of top eight cut for the third day as well, which was new for CanCon this year, which I think was really good. I sort of went to it going, I'm taking a list that I think is competitive, and it would be really nice to try and make that top eight, but I didn't think I would. I was trying to go for a 4-1 result this year. I felt like the list was good enough, but then as we'll get to it, that definitely did not happen. But it was nah, it was good. And then we were sort of booked to do the doubles on the Sunday, because it was obviously Friday and Saturday this year was the tournament, and then the doubles was Sunday. So me and Liam were kind of teamed up, and we both said if we make top eight, we'll do top eight. Otherwise, let's do doubles. And then it was kind of getting to it, and I don't think I really realised that the doubles was obviously starting at kind of 8 a.m. and then not really finishing till 7 p.m. I think, by the time you've done three games and they do all the scores and the presentations and everything. And when it got to the end of sort of Saturday after the fifth game, I was kind of like, I don't know if I want to. I was like, obviously we'll do it, but I was a bit like, oh God, it's going to be a really long day tomorrow. And then we wanted to sort of have a barbecue in the afternoon before heading off.
And get to see the rest of CanCon as well.
Yeah, exactly. Get some time to walk around. But because we were going to have to leave it again, we wanted to leave at like 5:30 in the morning on the Monday. I was like, well, we can't be doing a late barbecue. It needs to be like an afternoon barbecue. So like, if we weren't going to finish till 7, I was like, oh, this is actually going to not really be great and kind of facilitate doing a barbecue. But I was still like, okay, we're gonna do it. And then the guys went out on the Saturday night. We went for a bit, went to the pub, had a few, and then me and Geordie kind of went, cool, we've had our three, let's head home, sensible evening, cool. And then sort of Liam and the others went out, and then at 3:30 in the morning, I kind of woke up to the noise of them coming in the door, and sort of so was awake and saw my phone that Liam had messaged me, and there'd been a bit of an incident, unfortunately, at the Caratel. One of the guys, unfortunately, having an accident and ending up needing to go to hospital. So they kind of took him, and
Bit rough.
he's all fine and everything and sorted. But it was kind of a, yeah, okay, we've been at the hospital, it's 4 in the morning, I'm not doing the doubles in the morning. And obviously I was awake, so I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to do the doubles in the morning then, because I'm also now awake at this time. And also Liam had dropped, and I was like, that's fine, if you're not going to do it, I'm not going to do it, that's no stress. So I kind of said, don't worry about it, let's all just sleep till whenever. So we slept till 10, and then went to the convention and got to look around, went to look at the Crystal Brush and stuff, which was really cool.
Actually, I saw you on the telly, because I was watching there, the Crimson Brush guys were
Crimson Brush, sorry.
yeah no you're right. No, they were streaming their event the whole weekend, which was awesome. So I was able to kind of I just watched that all weekend, just had it on the background, just chilling watching that, and it was really enjoyable. And so I got to, throughout the whole weekend, seeing all, different people pop up in the screen in the background behind whatever they were talking about or doing. Yeah, and it was just, and I'm like trying to get you to like try messaging you to try and turn around and wave at the camera or something. I don't think
I didn't even
you did.
realize there was a camera. I never saw one, so.
So I saw Brant as well poking around, looking at stuff, and yeah, a few other faces and a lot of familiar faces going through. So that was really cool. But yeah, that was kind of like my kind of window into CanCon for the weekend from the couch at home. Yeah, I was like really kind of scraping for content, like really thirsty for content, especially from Call to Glory as well. With a few photos coming out and stuff. And I was like, oh man, it'd be great for the next year or in the coming years to get some more sort of media coverage, so sorry sods like me at home can follow along with the action. But yeah, no, that's good. I'm glad you got a chance to get around and have a look at everything. And is there any cool sort of standout stalls or miniatures or game systems that you wouldn't normally play or see that kind of stood out and got your attention?
Honestly, not really. It definitely felt like there was less there this year, like the overall convention. Like, because I don't think there was like the big 40K event and stuff that there has been previously, and a lot of the other halls felt emptier than they normally sort of have been in the past. They obviously still kind of have the main hall with stalls all through it, but a lot of the stalls are similar. There was lots of stalls for like medieval cosplay, and then sort of D&D stuff, and then obviously all your different kind of wargaming stores with, yeah, again, historicals, and then fantasy, and then obviously kind of Combat Company have their stall, Good Games for all the board games and all that kind of stuff. So there wasn't anything that kind of made me go, oh, I need to buy that now, I need to go and get that. I was just sort of walking around. Henry was there from Toowoomba, Henry Wagner, with his sort of polymath tabletop. So he was there selling his mats and objective rings and everything. So
Oh, cool.
I think by all accounts he had a good weekend. He's got some good full sets of, I think, like 1 to 15 inch market, like measuring sticks as well. So like every single, so you can get a 1, a 2, a 3, a 4, all the way up to 15 inches, which is really good as well, to just put on the table and stuff. So yeah, saw him and had a bit of a chat to him and everything. And yeah, as I say, looked around the Crimson Brush and saw the models and was like, obviously they're all amazing, or like they're all really good, but there was a couple in there that I was like, oh, there's a few in here that like make me go, do you know what, if I tried, I actually think I could have put a model in here and it wouldn't have been laughed out of the room.
It wouldn't have been the shittest model on the table.
It wouldn't have been the worst. It wouldn't have been the worst thing in the room.
Yeah, you're a braver man than me. I still haven't entered into something like that.
Oh, I didn't, and I wouldn't. I'm just like it. It was cool to go and see it and be like,
yeah.
Oh, actually, there's some stuff here that, yeah, like, and it definitely was like, obviously, you're looking at it going, okay, there's some stuff in here that like, is not at the sort of the same level that I would expect, but
yeah.
Without being like, oh, this is crap. There's some stuff in there that you're like, no, it still looks good, but you can see that it's not like high-end display sort of level. That I went, do you know what? I could have put models in here and been like, this is okay.
Yeah, it's like good to get involved in. Anyway, like, I've made a commitment for myself to put something into Crimson Brush next year. So something to aim towards there. And also now that we're running Mortal Blade every year, that's kind of like. Mm-hmm. If I am expecting people to, like, you know, buy tickets and put entries in for us, like for Mortal Blade, then, you know, I've got to start doing the same myself, really. So
try a bust.
Yeah, I've still got the bust that I got off Travis last year.
Yeah.
He brought along to Slaughter and Mortal Blade. So, yeah, I might do a bust, or I might just do a favorite mini, or like just do another take on a favorite model, or I don't know, or just pick one that I think. Like a model I've already painted, I think might be able to compete.
There's a new vampire queen kind of model from Archvillain Games that is a bust that I saw yesterday that I just printed. That is really, really nice as well.
Yeah.
So cool. I was like, oh, I could print you a bust in high detail if you want, and go, here you go, print that as a tester. Yeah. You want to get one of the properly made ones that isn't printed, because obviously that you'll get the marks where the supports and stuff join it. But for like a test, still nice bust, you could definitely like get a nice printed one and give it a crack. But
yeah, like it's definitely something I want to give a try and make steps towards. Like I know like your first years that you enter, especially in like Crimson Brush sort of level competitions, you know, it's a little bit daunting, but you just got to do it, I guess. Just go for it and work on yourself. And, you know, at the end of the day, you're not competing against anyone else. It's with yourself and your own progression and effort you want to put in, commitment. So, yeah, and that's kind of one thing I want to, like, kind of get out there with Mortal Blade is, like, you know, don't think that the Mortal Blade is sort of just meant for, you know, display painters and the top end people who like, you know, who just paint for their hobby. It's kind of, I want the message to get out there that it's geared at army painters and the average Joe sort of painters. It's for the little guy, you know, like to get in there and get involved and to get their work on display. It's more just about having everyone put their favorite stuff up and having just a cool room full of like heaps of different models and idea and just like an explosion of creativity that's comes from everyone. Like, so the more people that enter, the better. And like, you know, like, that's why I think this year we've got, you know, we've sort of switched gears to the more conventional award system, like gold, silver, bronze. So gold, silver, bronze, standard and commended.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've still got the same categories as what we did last year. So there's Hero of Legend, Regiment of Renown, Burly Bruisers, The Masterpiece, The Duel, and Monstrous Marvel as well. Yeah. So we've got six different categories and so each category is going to have a gold, silver, bronze standard, which the judges will determine. So if we've got like 10 silvers, like 10 models that are, or entries that are at a silver standard, then that's 10 silvers for that category. Yeah. Like it's just, and so on and so forth, like for golden, bronze and commended as well, to encourage those who are kind of like just almost there, the, you know, getting to that cusp of into the next sort of level with their painting. Like, but yeah, that's kind of like the spirit or the culture of the competition I'd like to cultivate and see develop over the coming years with at Slaughter with Mortal Blade. So, and yes, we'll have, well, hopefully, yeah, we'll definitely have crossover with the display painters guilds and scenes are in, you know, across Australia. Hopefully we see guys, especially in the Sydney guys as well, that they'll come up and support another little competition in addition to the ones that the bigger ones that they know. But yeah, it'd be cool just to see that crossover of different hobby sectors coming in to mix and mingle. And
yeah,
that's kind of the idea, I guess. So
yeah, and it will help. I think it will help also those good army painters that do sort of want to try the next step as well. Like they can enter stuff that they've tried like well at to sort of see what their level is, because they might be coming into it and go, actually, this is a bronze level. Or, and then there'll be the paint judges that can be there to talk to go, okay, how do I step this up? What's the next thing for me to focus on? And then you just keep trying and see if you can get to silver, and then ultimately see if you can get to a gold. It'll just be really cool, because we had some display painters come along last year, and obviously that was the first year of us kind of doing it that way. So to get any, I was happy that we attracted a few.
We did.
We probably need to kind of do a few posts and re-spruik that and speak to the people in those circles again to go, hey, reminder, this is on again this year. Tickets are on the website. Sort of details will go up. I'm hopefully going to sort of get the player pack done tomorrow and release the player pack as well. That would be really good. I loved being able to see the models and stuff at a tournament that we were doing last year, and looking forward to doing it again this year and everything. And kind of starting to see the prize table and stuff come together again is cool. And I've come up with the themed cocktails for this year as well, so I've sent them to the venue.
Put some Polly Jackson commissions.
Need to follow up on those as well, but there should be some more coins in the works. For us now
swag's coming. It's pretty easy now, isn't it?
Last year was kind of last year we upped it, and then it was like, okay, well, I can't go backwards on last year, but we kind of know what we're doing last year. And this year, I think now is kind of, we know what we're going to do to up the painting competition side of things. And we've got our stuff. We've got stuff that we're working on for those. Yeah. That kind of bronze, silver, gold commended and putting more effort and stuff into being able to do that this year. And everything. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that sort of comes together as well.
And there's going to be a best in show for Mortal Blade.
Yes. So there'll still be a crystal kind of award for a best in show. But otherwise, we kind of won't have the crystal awards for all the six categories this year, so that we can do a better supported bronze, silver, gold sort of
good
thing.
Spread.
Now I'm looking forward to it. It'll be good. And we've got sort of contingent of Kiwis coming over this year as well, making the trip from overseas. So that'll be great to kind of have some overseas people coming. And I think there's talk of a sort of Tasman Cup style pre-tournament game kind of happening on the Friday. Between the four Kiwis and four kind of Aussies. Hopefully we'll be able to sort of access the hall from the whole day on Friday as well, and we can have that going, and people can, if people want to come along and watch those games and help set up and stuff like that, it'll be great. And I know the venue will love having extra people there on for an extra day for Friday for food and drinks and stuff as well. So I'm heading down after work on the Thursday, so I'll be there and then leaving on the Monday, so I'll get a good kind of long weekend as well to do that. And it should be a good weekend. I'm looking forward to it. So
absolutely. And we've also, there's a few guys who've put their hands up for volunteering to help this year, like Jesse Perkins. We'll definitely have to he's offered assistance, especially with 3D printing and stuff like that as well. So if we need extra tables, Jesse, we're coming down your bearing. We should probably actually put together a plan for how many extra tables we need, because I know that the Crutchhammer guys brought extra terrain to help us fill out tables last year.
They brought three, but I've, as people will find out, I have bought six.
Oh, that's right. You bought more stuff.
New done tables. So we are.
That's right. Oh, we're good then. Okay.
They're nice. They're nice quality ones.
All right. Hold fire on that 3D printer for now. for now.
As long as we've got all your stuff, we're fine.
Yeah, you'll have my stuff anyway. And I'll try and add some more between now and then. I'm not making any promises though. but also, Lockie and Brogan, the Clark brothers, have extended their desire to get on board and help out as volunteers for the event this year. Because as listeners would know, the tickets sold out in like, I think it was like under 8 minutes. It was something ridiculous.
Yeah.
Again this year. So some of the core guys like Lockie and Brogues, unfortunately didn't get a ticket this time, but they've very, very graciously put their hand up to help us out with volunteering. So, welcome with open arms, you guys. Thank you so much for putting that, stepping forward and offering some assistance. Like,
yeah,
it's 100%. Awesome.
I will definitely use people. Like if you're there, bring an army. We'll
put you to work.
if we need a firebuster, one of you guys.
Yeah,
like, that's cool. And then also, I want more time to be able to go into the Mortal Blade competition and stuff and do that this year. So if I know I've got a few people, like Dan Brewer's going to help us out as always.
Excellent.
We know we've got a couple of people always walking around the hall that can sort of TO as well. It'd be great because, I'd love to be able to spend a bit more time in sort of the Mortal Blade room and just being able to walk around and chat to people and catch up rather than, hi, I'm at your table just to do TO type stuff. I want to be able to chat to people and make sure everyone's having a good time and have drinks and, just enjoy the weekend. So, it should be good. But,
We kind of digressed.
I was going to say, we kind of just jumped away on the Crimson Brush, kind of segued into there. But, I guess in terms of CanCon, we kind of obviously talked around the convention and that side of things. Kind of the overall sort of five games led to kind of, your top eight cut and the sort of best overall after the 2 days went to Smorgon himself with his gits. He got himself a golden ticket. So, great job, Smorgon. Well done. I know he was chuffed. And then the top eight cut on the next day led to another golden ticket going to Nathan Thompson with his KO. So he had a great run. Unfortunately, the final wasn't, I guess, the final game that I guess should have been for sort of Jaden Hargreaves from up here with his Nurgle. He did really well, and he won the second round game. And then kind of said, I can't, I have to fly back to Queensland. So I'm kind of going to forfeit the game. No. So that somebody gets to play the final, which is like very commendable of him to do that. Which meant sort of, it wasn't just an auto sort of Nathan gets the win because he wouldn't have had an opponent. But also kind of just want to say to Jaden, like essentially he got second, and that was a great effort from him. And he's a very deserving player as well. So, well done, Nathan. It was the first time I've actually got to sort of look at his army close up. Like I've seen pictures of it before, but hadn't actually kind of noticed from just the pictures until I sort of got up close to it that like all of the Thunderers and stuff are like, it's all converted from the, like the 40K dwarf guys, like the tech dwarf guys in 40K. I've forgotten what they're called.
Sons of Votan.
That's it. Leagues of Votan. And it's awesome. Yeah, he's got like a little one of their little land speeders that he's put like the gun hauler balloons on to convert that. And
are you looking at an Instagram or something? Do you have like a
no? Yeah. I just remembered it. Sorry, I have not prepared.
You're right. I was just
was the cool thing. That not doing the doubles, I guess, on that day meant that we could just walk around, see what was going on in the doubles. But then we sort of sat around it kind of in the background for, I guess, table one for the final game, sort of Joel versus Nathan, and got to see that game. Ended up being a sort of very one-sided kind of game with KO into Feck, when KO can just kind of blast it all off. So it was kind of a pretty one-sided game, but still kind of cool to get to watch it and see how things go. And there was definitely some talk that actually, like, if Joel had got sort of the double into one into two, that with how much damage the Beast Flayers and stuff like that could do, it could have actually gone in and potentially rinsed a bunch of stuff. But it went to Nathan, and he did a great job. And then I think from that went and won another five game event down in Victoria, I think, with Fire Slayers, beating KO in the end. So that's quite a funny pivot as well. So he's putting in a lot of reps at the moment, and obviously getting sort of solid result after solid result. So now congrats Nathan, and congrats Sam for your sort of both of your performances and golden tickets. So that was kind of the overall main, I guess, kind of I guess top standings. I think the overall was, I'm just trying to look at it. I think it was Sam, and then, like, this only shows after kind of the five games, but it was Sam Morgan in first, then Zach Rockman in second, who I think is from the same club as Smorgan. So they did a great showing. Then it was Nathan Thompson in third for the five games, and then Dave Kerr in fourth, Luca Forster with KO in fifth, Joel Graham with Feck in sixth, Anthony Quilty seventh with Soulblight Gravelords, Jaden Hargreaves eighth with Nurgle, Peter Bates with Seraphon in ninth, and then Jake Gunning with Soulblight in 10th. This is just looking at stats and ladders, filtering it down now. So apologies to anyone if that isn't quite right based on what actually got sort of released with the final scores by the TOs. But that's what's sort of showing on top on stats and ladders. So yeah, congrats to all those people sort of in the top 10. And yeah, it was
And
yeah, it was a really good event.
before I move on as well, I just wanted to make sure I give proper acknowledgement to the guys who ran. So as we know, I've already mentioned a few guys before, but there were other guys involved. So just wanted to do proper shout out to obviously Jason Harris for taking up the mantle, old grey beard himself, legend, and top man. And so we had Dave Hurley, and Matt Holt, who I've mentioned, but also Daniel Worthington, of Beast Gaming, and also Jason with his son, Mick, and his friend Luca. And then with me a little bit in the background there. So yeah, just want to do proper acknowledgements and shout outs there to the organizers, and of course to CanCon as well. They get a bad rap in the organizing part in the background, but at the end of the day, it's a pretty huge event that happens every year. We all gravitate towards it, so they must be doing some things all right. But I don't know if you noticed, but in the official results, I'm just having a look now. The best sports went to Alex Murray, and the best sports runner-up went to Ben Spinetti. Best painted went to Thomas Oliver, and the best painted runner-up went to Bradley Baker. And so huge congratulations to those guys. And those best painted awards were judged by the judges from Crimson Brush, who came over as well. And so then we went down to Coolest Army. So Tim Barclay with his incredible sort of like, I guess you could say like forest fairy, like
It was like a
Soulblight
fae.
Army. Yeah, like
Yeah.
fae Soulblight Army. And Tom with his Seraphon Army, just like absolutely nailing it, that guy. Huge congrats to Alex and Ben. So the D3 boys taking home the best sports again. And then there's also one award which I really liked, was the old Grumbler. So the old Grumbler, I think, was the they went to Stephen Drury. So yeah, yet another legend, Slaughter regular. So that was the person who placed dead center, like dead middle of the pack, I believe.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So
Yeah,
yeah, cool. A
it was
cool
pretty
spread
funny.
of awards and a lot of a lot of cool stuff going on. And Wooden Spoon, last but not least, well, yeah, least I guess, but Emma Pike. Emma Pike. Sorry. Well
Last
done.
but not least, but least.
Oh dear. Oops. But yeah, good times. Yeah. Did you want to talk about your games had over the weekend?
Yeah, I will just quickly, just to more kind of give my opponents their dues and comments. And I had five really enjoyable games. So round one, I was against Sean Ratcliffe, which was
Sean.
Which is, yeah, great to see. When the pairings came up, I was like, awesome. I know no matter what, I'm having a good game round one. So yeah, it was great to get to play Sean. He was playing Flesh Eater Courts, which were in a very interesting position for CanCon. One and only tournament in the world that they ever would have worked the way that they worked at this tournament, because it was old book but new scrolls. So the ghouls, they got the new ghoul war scroll, but it all worked under the old book. So they still had the spells for the extra attacks. They still had the double piling command ability and all that stuff, but it was under their new war scroll, where kind of they get rend and fives and sixes to hit auto wound and all that jazz. So they were quite potent. I would just say the combination of Flesh Eater Courts with old book new scrolls with the chalice and stuff like that. So I was playing Sean, and first battle plan was Geomantic Pulse, and I kind of set up in the middle. There was a bit of like a garrisonable big tower, and I thought, okay, I don't know if I actually want to garrison this or not, because I was worried about his dragons just coming across the table, and with double pile in, they can lift a whole unit of sort of 15 snakes, because I had two units of 15 fight on death snakes with kind of, that was the tech there, and I thought, like, this is pretty good, four up rally and all the mortals and stuff that they can do, but there are things that can lift them, and a dragon with the buffs going twice is one of them. So I was very wary of the two dragons, and trying to kind of stay away from them, but sort of sat in the middle, and then Sean kind of went first and pushed up onto the objectives, because he's got three 20 blocks of ghouls, I think, and all the summoning from all the heroes, and just kind of summoned Beast Flayers and it would have been like Crypt Ghouls and Horrors and a Vargolf and everything like on the flank to sort of come in and potentially just make charges and put models on all the other objectives. So I kind of was like, okay, well, I'm going to shuffle a bit in my turn. And I know, like, you don't want to commit to a side until you know sort of the second priority. But because of where this building was, and I didn't want to just sit exactly in the same position, I kind of moved one unit off to one of the sides, and then obviously sort of lost the priority role, which then meant Sean went, okay, well, I'll go second, because I was still out of the way because I'd gone off to one side, and he was like, okay, well, I'll go second and I'll make it obviously the objective that was further away from my stuff. So I'm kind of like, okay. And it was on the side where he just summoned all the extra stuff. So I kind of tried to go across and attack some stuff and kind of kill the summoning. But I did a bit, killed a few of the units, and was like, I'm okay, but trying to also be cagey from these dragons. But then have to move into the middle of the board, really, because the objective's in the middle, and the objectives are worth so many points in this mission. You can't. It's not one of the missions where you can kind of get your five battle tactics and your grand strat and stay relatively similar by just getting one, get the occasional one, two more kind of thing. You have to be on the objectives. So I kind of had to sort of move there, but was still trying to be cagey for the first few turns, because I didn't want, like, I wanted the game to go on longer so that I can put my increase the battle round prayers and buffs off, so that I can be like, cool, well, I've got my five up rerollable ward save and plus one hit, plus one wound, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. What was your army?
So it's Daughters of Cain, 2 15s of snakes.
Yeah.
A slaughter in fight on death ones, 8th Arcai. Slaughter Queen on Cauldron for the hero phase pile in. And then four units of Heart Renders and a unit of Shadow Stalkers.
Yeah.
And then Hag Queen on foot
yep.
for the City Cup. But yeah, I kind of was like, okay, there's tech in there to, as I say, from round, you could essentially, like, I think from round three, I could have had a five up rerollable ward save, plus one hit, plus one wound, four up rally, fight on death, all that jazz. So I'm like, okay, it's pretty cool. But also they do just have a five up save. And so when you don't have the five up rerollable ward and you do just have like a five up save, it's like, actually, you can just get destroyed. but yeah, so I moved up a bit, and then I think it was pretty much just Sean's turn too. Like, I went into the middle, didn't realize that I put one snake within like 2 millimeters of 12 inches of just one, like his Ghoul King on foot, that's just in his list, just gets given Blizzard just as a throwaway. Cool. didn't think about it, but was just within 12 on his turn. Okay, and then he cast Blizzard on a double six, so I couldn't do anything about it. And then he rolls the 4d6 and he goes 6, 6, 6, 4.
Oh my
and
God.
I was like, oh, okay, I've just copped 22 more wins from one Blizzard.
Oh my God.
Yeah, sick. Okay.
Awesome.
So basically, one unit just melted to a Blizzard, and then on the same turn, he got Hoarfrost off for rend 3 on 20 ghouls, and just one unit of 20 ghouls in one pile-in just lifted the other unit of snakes. So I was just like, cool, all right, well, the game's done. basically 20 ghouls and a Ghoul King, and I was like, okay, well, both my 15s of snakes are dead. I can't do anything.
Wow.
He didn't even use the dragons. And I was like, yeah. And like, obviously, he could bring the units back on four ups and stuff with Morgorn. And I was just like, yeah, no, I've got no chance. So game one was a absolute smashing for me against Sean. So it ended up being a... it's showing as a 19-7 on here, but I don't quite know how that works. But yeah, so showing as a 19-7. But yeah, Sean absolutely smashed me. So yeah, it was straight away like, cool, okay, well, I'm not going 5-0 at this event. We're smashed. But it was a great game. And yeah, I don't actually know how Sean went on to do for the rest of the event. I might come back to that. But yeah, that was fun. So then second round was Spring the Trap, and I went down the tables. And I got to play James Landis. So it was another Sydney Padstow kind of like, I remember playing or like seeing for the like meeting for the first time at kind of Company of Dice and stuff, which was similar to Sean. So I was like, oh, okay, this is like a nice trip down memory lane. But I think me and James had maybe played, neither of us could properly remember, but one game.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we got to play, and he had...
he's a really nice guy, James. I've always liked James. Yeah,
he's great. So, yeah, we had another sort of really great game. He had Slaves to Darkness in Cabalist. So he had kind of a couple of Chaos Sorcerer Lords, Chaos Sorcerer Lord on Manticore, Chaos Lord on foot. And he had 10 Chaos Warriors that were Nurgle, 5 Knights that were Nurgle, 5 Knights that were Khorne. And then he had 10 Slaanesh Chosen. With the banner of Screaming Flesh. And then he had 3 Theridons with Khorne and the axes. And then he had a Slaanesh War Shrine. So, yeah, this was another one where I was kind of like, okay. And he had Levitate on one of the Chaos Sorcerer Lords. And, yeah, obviously the Mark of Slaanesh on the Chosen.
Leviosa.
Yeah, so the Mark of Slaanesh on the Chosen meant that they could run and charge, and they get plus 2 to charge because they get plus 1 on the scroll, plus 1 from being Mark of Slaanesh. And then you can give them from the War Shrine, from the prayer from the War Shrine, you could give them 3d6 charge. And obviously he could make them fly. So I was like, okay, if everything goes off, the threat range on these Chosen is actually insane because he can auto run them 6. And then like if he wants to, or he can just roll the dice and get the extra pluses, but I think they basically move 5, auto run 6, so they can go 11, and then he can charge on 3d6 plus 2.
Yeah.
and just be like, oh, and levitate, jump over screens and just go wherever. And so I was like, and then with that banner, they get plus one attack when they charge as well. So I was like, they're pretty good. And then just three Therodons as well with Mark of Corn and the axes can slap. And then, yeah, choke 10 warriors with Nurgle can be tough to shift. And the knights as well are really effective screens as well. So we kind of both played very cagey for like the first three turns. But I managed to get ahead with just kind of the objective play. I kind of played a bit cagey. And then once I did push in turn three onto two of the objectives with like a 15 of snakes on either side with the cauldrons and stuff like that. And then I was like, okay, cool. And then I could kill stuff like fighting the hero phase or blast stuff off the mortal wounds. And then sort of survive the chosen and then be able to hit them back. I was losing stuff, but then I was also killing his and I was on the objectives and had enough bodies that I was getting one, two more. And then I had some harpies to just drop down on the other one and I could just keep getting my battle tactics. So I managed to get the win on that. So that was a 21-5 to me for that one.
Yep.
And then round three, I played person I've never played before or come across, Alistair Ashley with Skaven, and this was in Power Flux. And again, this was another great game. Alistair was a really lovely guy. He had a cool list with a couple of is kind of the bell list with clan rats where it can sort of shrug off wounds and then he can try and summon vermin lords. But he had a unit of six, two Grey Seers on Screaming Bell. He had another Grey Seer, so that he got the three Grey Seer thing for the, whenever you make a run or a charge roll, the first roll each turn, you can use that for all the units in your army. So if he makes a high charge with the first charge roll, everything can use it. And then he had a couple of Master Molders and then, yeah, 320s of Clan Rats. And then he had like a unit of six Rat Ogres, which is a double reinforced unit, a unit of 18 Giant Rats, two throwaway sixes of Giant Rats, and then a Hellpit Abomination. We're in Power Flux. So I went for the middle objectives, sort of let him go first. And then I went for the middle to kind of go, okay, well, Skaven are going to be able to spread out. Like, I don't want to spread out too much. He can. I don't really want to push wide to the sides. And also, if I know he's going to go first, the chances of him getting my objective as well as his are quite low. So I sort of thought I'll limit him. But yeah, turn one, he went for a teleport sort of from the back of the board, next to a warp gnaw, he had the six Rat Ogres. Whip them with the Master Molder to give them, I think it's plus one to wound and plus three to charge. And then teleports them through a gnaw hole to the side of the board, sort of, because you can go wholly within six of the gnaw hole. That was kind of nine away. Even though the gnaw holes are on the edge, they're six in, and then you can go six in from that. So you can actually get like 12 inches in from the board edge, nine away from sort of my home objective. And then he moved up one of the Grey Seers on the bell as well, and then sort of went, oh, I'll just roll the charge, and he rolled an 11. So then he can use that 11 for anything. And the Rat Ogres get the plus three from being whipped, so then he does a 14 inch charge from the side of the board straight into the middle on my objective into a block of 15 fighty sisters. And obviously he in his turn had cast Death Frenzy onto the Rat Ogres, so they have fight when they die, and my blood sisters have fight when they die. turn one,
boom,
which fighting on my objective, 15 blood sisters against his six Rat Ogres. And then there was an interesting interaction that came up with the, if two units have fight when they die, how does it work? Because per activating unit, one unit can only fight once when they die. So like, he activates his unit, fights me, and then the models that die fight him, which then kills one or two of his, so then they fight when they die. But then
when they'll kill stuff. Yeah.
The models that die to that one then can't fight again when they die, because that's my activation for his activation. Yeah. So it was kind of like, okay, so you fight me, I die, I fight you, you die, you fight me. That was your activation done. Then I did my pile-in with my remaining stuff, fought him, then some more of his died, then fought me, so then some more of mine died, and then fought him.
Yeah.
So turn one, like his turn one, top of the game, we did like six or eight activations or something between our two units.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was a bit nuts. And then I was still alive and in combat with like six or seven of them or something. So then it came to my turn. So then I fought in the hero phase.
then it all happened again.
So then some more of his died, and then four. So that was quite funny until I kind of had then killed them. So then by the end of turn one, I'd killed the six, and then my unit had gone down to like a unit of five, I think. But then I was like, that's fine, because I've got four up rally.
Yeah.
And so then I moved up the other unit into like his bell, was able to kind of fight and start hurting the bell. But obviously he has clan rats behind it, so kind of just was passing off wounds. And I was like, oh, this is actually going to take a while to kill this bell, because when they find a Stour in that, he's like, okay, well, I've got like a four up save and then a five up ward, and he can shrug onto the clan rats as well. So I was like, actually, this bell could hold me up for a while here. But yeah, game kind of played out. In all honesty, I think I was like, oh, I don't actually know which way this is going to go. And then he went for there was a bell holding me up in combat, and he went for the ring the bell to shatter it to try and get the Vermin Lord, because it had taken a number of wounds.
Yeah.
But he rolled the one, and if you roll the one, the whole bell dies.
Ghost Gaven.
So then I was like, oh, I think that just basically helped me win the game, because it then meant he wasn't in combat with me. The bell was gone. And so then in my turn, I was like, cool, now I'll be able to rally and then go into him. And so then from that point, I was like, okay, cool, now I can go in. And then it was just sort of fighting onto his objective and just killing through stuff really quickly at that point. But yeah, those six rat ogres are really good, especially as then they come back and it's a whole unit. So yeah, he just like, he does all that tech, can send them in, then they die. And as long as he rolls the like four up or whatever, then the whole six come back again and he can just do it all over again. Yeah. So yeah, they're really good. If they get the fight on death as well, they're really, really good. So yeah, that was a really fun game. I managed to, yeah, as I say, sort of get a good solid win in the end for that one, being a 21-4. And yeah, Alistair was a lovely guy. So yeah, sort of another great game to kind of finish off the day. So I went from getting smashed to then having two solid wins. So I was still like, okay, well, the 4-1 is still an option. Like still potential. So yeah, kind of ended day one as a 2-1. But yeah, and then as I said, sort of that first day we kind of went out, and I think that first day we just went back to we went out for dinner somewhere nice, and then I think we went to a like Japanese place and had like a all you can eat, which was amazing actually, in Canberra.
Nice.
With the Crutch Hammer boys, and like there was a big crew of us, so that was really nice. Actually, we went for a good sort of all you can eat Japanese, and then we went back to the Airbnb and just sort of chilled out for a bit. And then day two, it was Every Step Is Forward, which did come into this, and I was playing against Joshua or Josh Craig, who again, guy I hadn't sort of met before, heard, but he's from Perth. So him and a couple of guys had sort of made the trip over from Perth and were trying to hope that some more people would come over kind of to the Perth scene and stuff like that. And yeah, he was great. He was obviously a really good player. He was playing Bone Reapers. So he had Mortis Praetorians, which is the counter charge subfaction. And he had Catacross and the Ossifactor with Dark Acolyte. and Nadarite, empower Nadarite weapons, and then Liege Kavalos with an Arcane Tome. And then you had 5 Death Riders, 10 Mortec Guard, 6 Immortus, and then 4 Archai.
Yep.
So the 4 Archai in Mortis Praetorians is the real kind of scary piece. Because, I think everyone's learned actually how good they are now. And when they can countercharge you potentially, you kind of do have to worry about them. This game was a really good one. Again, it was really interesting. I felt like I was definitely in the lead at the start. Every Step is Forward has like 6 objectives that were quite spread out. Bone Reapers generally don't like spreading out. And I sort of had my 4 throwaway units of Harpies, Witch Elves essentially a throwaway, and my Shadow Stalkers that could teleport around. And Bone Reapers can struggle with battle tactics, I've sort of found, depending on the mission. Or certainly they're not like, this is kind of planned, guaranteed. Whereas Daughters of Cain are very much like, especially the list I wrote was pretty much guaranteed that I just get like 5 battle tactics and my grand strat every game kind of thing. Hmm. I was sort of ahead for the first couple of rounds, sort of scoring the 1-2 more, getting my tactics. I deployed stupidly and gave him a turn 1 tactic by putting my Witch Elves opposite where, because he was a 1 drop and he won the roll off and deployed his whole army. So I had full kind of knowledge of the board. And then I deployed my 10 Witch Elves in the space opposite his Death Riders. And I just didn't need to do that. I could have put them the complete other side of the board for them to run up and score me the surround and destroy by running up there. And I could have just had the Shadow Stalkers teleport to where I was going to put the Witch Elves to score it. So I didn't need to put anything in threat range, but I stupidly did. And that let him immediately score his sort of Death Rider battle tactic and kill my unit Witch Elves. Well, not kill them, but kind of kill 4 or 5 of them, get a tactic, whatever. But I was still, first kind of couple of rounds, I was scoring 1-2 more, getting my tactics. He was only really kind of scoring like 1-2, not the more. And then I was, again, playing pretty cagey. And then I realized when we kind of talked through how the countercharge works, that it wasn't as good as I thought it was. So I thought he got to countercharge before I do my charges. So I was like, if I move within range, those Archai are just going to countercharge me and all this stuff doesn't happen and whatever, because if he rolls an 8 to charge, they get fight first and all that stuff. And then when we kind of talk through, it's like, no, it's after you finish a charge within 12 of a unit, I can choose to countercharge. And I was like, oh, okay, that's very different. So I kind of had my 2 15s of snakes, the unit at the bottom, I charged into the Death Riders and to kind of tag the end of the 6 Immortus Guard, but I could do that charge and not go within 12 of the Archai.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't be able to do the counter charge thing, and the other 2 units wouldn't be able to because they were already charged and tagged up. So I was like, okay, that's cool. I'll get this brick into here. And then I went, actually, if I'm fighting first and I've got +1 to hit, I've got +1 to wound, I get to do all my mortals after I activate, I actually feel like that's my best chance into those Archai, because they were like sitting there and I was like, okay, I can charge. So I went, I ummed and ahed a bit about, is this the right move or not? And then I think I realized, I went, no, I think I do. I think I have to just go for it. And then when I moved them up, he then tried to redeploy away from me. So I was like, yeah, okay, he doesn't want me to go into them. but I got the charge off. He did have the Mortec there and a bit around, so I couldn't quite get kind of everything in, but I got all of the 15 snakes into combat, but it wasn't all into the Archai. So I think I had like 3 of them maybe into the Mortec Guard, 3 maybe into the Immortus Guard on the other end, but then I still think I had about 9 or 10 snakes into the Archai. Sort of did my attacks, rolled okay, and then Josh rolled terribly for his armor saves. So like he was saving on 3 pluses because I only have rend 1 and he's got Catacross and +1 save, whatever. But he rolled so many 1s and 2s and I was like, I might actually do a fair bit here. Because then obviously I get to do the mortal wounds as well after the attack. So I actually managed to kill 3 of the 4. Oh, and wow. I was like, because they can't come back. like, other than rallying, they can't come back. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay, one of these is a lot less scary now. I should be in a good position here. But then even just the Mortec guard then didn't really die from my attacks of the other snakes. Like, I only put probably 9 attacks or whatever into them, but like nothing really died. And then they get to hit back. And I was like, I lost a lot of snakes. Yes, I get to fight and die, but I wasn't really doing much because I only had rend one. And so armies that have high armor saves against the list I had taken, unless it's my initial, I attack you and then I blast you with mortals on 2+, I actually didn't do a lot of damage with my list because of the rend one sort of weakness. So the fight when you die, not that great if you're not actually getting through armor. So yeah, even just the 10 Mortec, I kind of thought I would get through half of them. And I didn't really kill any. I killed maybe one. And then the Immortus Guard as well, I didn't really kill any. Or I maybe killed one or two with the mortal wounds. But I didn't even kill, like, the Death Riders. So it took two combat phases to kill them. So I was kind of like, okay. But, yeah, I was sort of – I'd done a fair chunk. There was one Archai, and I was like, okay, I've still got my bodies. I'm on the objectives. I'm ahead. Felt pretty good. And then he rallied the Archai and he got one back. And I was like,
my God. Yeah.
I was sixes. I was like, there's one back. And I kind of said to him at the time, I was like, to be fair, you shouldn't have lost 3. So that's fair that you rallied one back. But but yeah, and then he kind of flew them over and then they got into my cauldron. And then 2 Archai just took off the cauldron in one go. And then as soon as that was gone, and then like the Immortus Guard and stuff could fight through the remaining snakes and then just kill them, I was like, ah, okay, now I'm in trouble because I've just lost all my bodies and I've lost any ability to do damage because as much as I've got my 4 units of Harpies and the Shadowstalkers, they cannot do any damage. So like they can maybe teleport and stand on an objective for 1 turn, but then as soon as a unit hits them, they're dead. So then kind of played for tactics. And then this is where that mission actually came into it, where that every step is forward is if you retreat, you can't score.
Yeah.
And so I had this turn where I was trying to think of the battle tactics and I was like, no matter what, I think I will fail a tactic. And it's, do I do it now? Which tactic do I pick? If I retreat these guys here, they'll be alive so I could get battle tactics. But because of the retreating, I was like, damn it. Like I had more bodies in any other normal mission. I'd just be like, cool, I'll just retreat and I'll stand here like against your liege. Cause he is like in combat with a liege.
Yeah.
And I'm like, cool, well, you're 2 bodies, I'm 5. Normally I'd just be like, I'll retreat. I'm still on the objective. I get this. But because of that, I was like, I really had to think about what I was going to do. And then in the end, I think I worked out at the end of the game, it was the wrong, like the way I did it was the wrong way. Because it meant stuff just got killed in trying to achieve the tactical the way I did it. But yeah, it turned out that I basically, I think Josh got ahead by like 1 or 2 points. So ended up being a 21-4 to Josh in the end with the major win. But it had been, I was ahead for the first like 3 battle rounds. And then he kind of got the 1-2 more for the last battle rounds and I didn't. And he got all of his battle tactics in credit to him, which was always something with OBR I found was more of a struggle, but he knew which ones to pick and he achieved all of them. So yeah, that was really good game 4. And yeah, thanks again for the game, Josh. And yeah, if there's anyone sort of thinking about heading over to Perth, maybe for some events, definitely get over there. It sounds like they've got a good crew and yeah, it'd be good to kind of support some events over there too. Yeah, but that sort of took me down to 2-2. So I knew kind of, okay, well, I'm definitely not getting a 4-1 here. Hopefully I can get a 3-2, but sort of I'm in danger territory now of going 2-3 again. But yeah, so round 5 was Nexus Collapse, and I drew against Damien Musi, I think is how you pronounce it. I'll probably butcher that, but it's Musci, and he was playing Deepkin, so an army I know very well, at least. So he was playing sort of Futhan with 3 sharks. She might have been more than that, actually, because he had a I think he had four sharks. I think he had a Shiver and a single shark, and then 20 Thralls, and then 10 Reavers, and then a Leviadon, and the Slap King himself. So the Achillean King, and then a Soul Render and an Eidolon of the Storm as well. And yeah, we were kind of, I know Deepkin well, but I also know that Deepkin, from experience, Deepkin, I think, are really good into Daughters, especially the sort of the Marathi build, because they can easily, like, especially the Sharks and the Turtles, they can, from 24 inches away, easily chip off the three wounds a turn kind of thing, and they can stay away and keep doing the damage until she's gone and then come in. Obviously, I didn't have Marathi in my list, but
yeah,
at the same time, like, my Shadow Stalkers and just my little units, he can just stay away from me at 24 inches with all those sort of, what, 8 shots off the turtle and then another 16 shots from the 4 sharks. So there was a lot of shooting there. And then he kind of had the 20 Thralls in front of the boat, which had 10 Reavers garrisoned inside it. So there was a bit of a bunker there with then the King that could kind of fly around in the background and then sort of come in when he wanted to.
Yep.
But yeah, it was kind of the start of the game. We sort of were having our chat and Damien was like, look, we're both 2-2. Neither of us is winning or getting anything from this. Let's just have a good game and everything. And I was like, yeah, no, absolutely. Like, yeah, I just want to have a fun game. And yeah, kind of all my, all my games, I was sort of playing on the clock. As I sort of mentioned from previous tournaments, I really like playing on the clock now. I think it's been really, really good for me to feel like I can take my time if I need to and chill out and think about a decision, and also not worry if my opponent's sort of taking their time, because if they run out of time, like, that's on me. Like, and it's something they need to think about. I don't need to be thinking like, oh, my opponent's using up all the time kind of thing. So yeah, I was sort of playing on the clock, and yeah, obviously kind of had that conversation with all my opponents at the start, saying like, are you cool playing sort of on the clock? And everyone kind of said, yeah, like Sean in the first game sort of said, oh, like, I haven't really played on it before. But like, happy to sort of practice on one. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. Like, I'm happy to manage like the clock. If you aren't familiar with it, haven't used it much, I'll manage it for both of us the whole game. That's fine. And yeah, like it wasn't a problem at all. And yeah, kind of kept playing it. And then, yeah, so we sort of played this game and I was like, do I deploy back in a corner to kind of stay away? But then I'm like, well, I'm just going to get shot anyway. And again, all that shooting can quite easily whittle my snakes down. I was like, I kind of have to just charge at him at least and sort of pressure where he can, like, or at least stand on the objectives kind of thing. And pressure his ability to at least score objective points, because I also know Deepkin really struggle with battle tactics. Like, you can get battle tactics, obviously, sort of turn one, turn two, turn three, if you use your kind of surround and destroy, intimidate, potentially magical dominance, etc. But unless you're really thinking about stuff for turn four and turn five, you can definitely struggle for battle tactics at the end of the game. Whereas obviously mine is very strong for battle tactics and grand strat, so I was kind of like, okay, I should, like, I've just got to try and play knowing he's hopefully going to drop a few battle tactics. I don't drop any of mine. I try and deny his grand strat, which was the, he just has to, like, have, I have to have something within three of one of his boats basically at the end of the game to stop it. And obviously mine is just everything has to have fought or died, which is very easy to achieve in my list. but yeah, we're kind of playing, and then first turn I felt reasonably good about it. To be honest, I felt like, okay, no, this has gone well, I'll push up. And then he kind of came in to, like, down the side to go into one of my 15s of snakes, but he was trying with like a shark and a turtle and the king, and the shark and the shooting did way less than I think both of us were expecting. It only killed probably like 3 out of the 15, I think, from the shooting. And then the turtle, he hadn't really planned to charge in. It was like 11 inches away, so that didn't make it in. And then the shark didn't make it in. So it was just the king. And he was like, oh, I think I'm just sending the king in to die, but he's like, but also if I don't charge it, like it's your turn next, you're just going to charge it and kill him. So he kind of sent the king in, and obviously he's got his, I'll activate my kind of high tide. So I made sure I didn't have loads of units bunched together, so he'd only get plus two attacks, no extra kind of bonuses. And then he rolled so hot, like that slap king just slapped. And he literally killed the entire unit. And I was like, oh, okay. And he, Damien was also like, I was not expecting that. And I was like, yeah, I was like, not gonna lie, that actually might just win you the game. Because I kind of was like, even if I've got one snake left, that's fine. I inspiring presence and then I can four up rally and then I'm fine. But yeah, he killed the whole unit and then the king didn't die on like the fight on deaths because he's got a two up armor save. And as I said, if I'm not doing mortal wounds, like two up armor save, he's going to survive. So yeah, I kind of was like, oh, yeah, okay. I don't think I can win this game now because my plan was that 15 snakes was going to go up, kill the king, then kill the shark and be able to basically just hold those objectives at the top and be a menace. And then I've got the other 15 to sort of run at the other objectives in the boat. And even if they sort of died, I would have been able to hold those objectives for a couple of turns and then still always have the threat of the other 15 coming in. But just losing that 15 and not killing the king was like, oh, yeah, no, I'm in big trouble now. Yeah. But yeah, so we kind of played, obviously kind of played it out a bit. And he came in with the king again, he had the king then to kind of have the cauldron. I was trying to make a charge to the cauldron to try and kill the king. Can't quite remember what happened in the end, but I don't think it happened. But basically I pushed forward and sort of went through and killed like the thralls. I got my other 15 sort of into his thralls and hero and managed to kind of clear the thralls out and killed a shark going into the thralls as well. So I kind of killed a couple of the sharks and the thralls and the hero with the, I think he had the hero with the, no, he didn't. That's right. He didn't have magical dominance in this list. But yeah, sort of pushed forward and was like, okay, well, I can stand on these objectives for a bit. And then I've got kind of the harpies and sort of the shadow stalkers. But he was targeting the shadow stalkers to just kill them, which makes sense. Get rid of them, stop me being able to score as easily. But then had the harpies kind of drop down and grab some objectives as well. But then once they're on the table, they're getting shot by the turtle or the sharks. So it was the sort of thing I'm like, okay, well, I'm holding them until turn three. If he gets high tide, obviously I'm hoping, to be honest, that I go second in turn three so that again his high tide is done before then the harpies and stuff come down. So I'm at least kind of like, well, even if everything else is dead, I've got four units of harpies that he can't do anything about. He's got not that many bodies and I can still sort of score my battle tactics and a few objectives with these four units. It kind of came to it, I think he was starting to kind of try and think about his turns, and then it kind of got to the point where I had my harpies down sort of on his objective and he was kind of running, like he was actually running quite low on time, and I sort of said like, you are going to have to kind of just watch your time because you've only got like 15 minutes left. And it's like, yeah, that's fine. And then we got there and then we kind of got to the point in the fifth turn where I sort of said, okay, you've run out of time now. So yep. you can't do anything. But in the round, we had like another 25 minutes left because I had 25 minutes on my clock still. And it's like, oh no, we still got time. I was like, well, no, I've got time, but you've used all of your time. Yep. And so then he was like, oh, I didn't really kind of understand the clock. And I was like, oh, okay. Like we had a conversation at the start and like you said, you were fine with the clock and everything. You didn't kind of say there was any understanding. So we had a bit of a chat and he sort of said, okay, like, what can I do? And I sort of just said, like, I said, okay, so I can't like make the clock mandatory. Like, cause I'd already asked the TOs ahead of the event, like, what's the go with clocks? if people want to play on clocks, like, will you enforce them, etc.? And Jason had clearly said before the event, like, no, we won't be enforcing clocks and stuff. So I knew that going into it, and I was like, okay, no, that's fine. Obviously, I was hoping that, like, if opponents had sort of agreed to it, that they would play to it. Yeah, they play to it. But I kind of explained to my opponent, because he kind of said, okay, so what can I do? And I basically said, well, you can carry on. Like, we've got 25 minutes left in the round, so I can't enforce the clock. So if you want, you can carry on as you are and play your turn out, and, like, you'll shoot my stuff off and you'll kill me and, like, you'll win the game. But, like, if you do that, I'll probably dock you a sports point, just because from my kind of interaction, it feels a bit crap that I thought we were playing on the clock and you've sort of used a bit more time to think.
You've reneged on it,
And then you've kind of gone, oh, well, I'm going to go back on it. But, it's been a long time since I get, like, I mean, I've never got aggressive at the table, but, like, I don't ever get even kind of cross or, I don't know, stern. I just am very open about what I'm going to do. I'm like, okay, no, that's fine. Like, absolutely, you can do that. I can't enforce anything. If you want to do that, though, it does feel a little bit crap from my perspective, because I thought we'd agreed we were playing on the clock. So I'll dock you one sports point. That's all I can dock you, because everything else, you're at the table on time. You know your rules. You've got your tape measure. Like, that's all fine. And that was kind of just how it was. And we kind of talked it through, and because of the position I was in, he would not obviously be able to achieve a battle tactic, because he had one, which is just kill two units within range of a boat, which I had two units of harpies next to his boat. So he would be able to shoot them. If he elected to obviously go by it, he could pick that battle tactic, then he can roll his shooting attacks, kill them, which then also means he achieves his grand strat, because I wouldn't have any models next to him. But if he obviously didn't, he wouldn't be able to pick a battle tactic, and he would have failed his grand strat because I was next to the boat. So, we kind of talked it through. I was like, so I sort of said, so this is what you can do. And he just went, yeah, I'm just going to shoot him off. And I was like, okay, that's fine. Fair enough. So, ended up getting the loss in that game on that. So, yeah, kind of ended up being a 2-3 overall, which, and honestly, like, no hard feelings to Damien. I thought it was a little bit funny, as, like, obviously he'd been the one at the start of the game that kind of said, we're both 2-2, it doesn't matter what happens, sort of thing. And I was like, okay, well, does it matter if you're going to lose then?
It's, like, mattering now.
Like, going against, yeah.
It's mattering now because I've run out of time.
Yeah.
I can just smash you now if I... Yeah.
So it was a little bit funny. But then at the same time, on the other hand, to be fair, the game, like, we had 25 minutes left. I wasn't going to need 25 minutes, and it was very obvious what can happen. I also can just see from the other side, just go, which is 100% what he did. Like, yeah, no, fuck it. I'm just going to not choose to abide by the clock. I'm going to shoot you off. I'm going to get the battle tactic, and I'm going to get my grand strat and win the game. And I was like, yeah, fair enough. So, like, no hard feelings, but yeah,
not really fair enough, but
it was an interesting interaction, I guess, that hadn't come up before, but I thought, I don't know, let's still talk about it. Like, honestly, hopefully Damon's not offended. Like, I'm not trying to drag anyone's name through the mud. It's just a thing that also hopefully might be something for other people that are less comfortable, I guess, with potential confrontation situations, to just be like, this doesn't have to be like a stressful confrontation. I'm like, I'm very open at the table in, like, saying outright, if you choose to do that, I'm going to dock you one sports point because it feels a bit crap, but that's it. Like, I'm not going to go off and give you zero for sports, and I can't, that wouldn't be fair to give you zero either, because, like, we've had a good fun game and it's been fine. It's just one interaction of kind of going, oh, okay, well, I thought we were playing under one sort of situation with the clock, and then it turns out we're not, sort of thing. But yeah, it was fine. Like, just in all honesty, I found it amusing than anything else. Like, as I say, 2-3, 3-2 really doesn't matter. I was nowhere. I was nobody. Have been for a long time. So it wasn't the result I was hoping or thinking I was probably going to get this year, in all honesty, with that list. But then it was funny after the tournament, seeing Smorgan's list and going through it, I was like, actually, his list and what it does and the tech behind it is pretty much everything I have in my list, but way better. Like the 215s, the 215s of Boingrots are the equivalent of the 215s of snakes, and they're the same cost, but the damage output on the Boingrots is so much higher. Mm-hmm. He gets the 4-up rally with Grimcrack. He's got Fight on Death, but he can bring them back at half strength through the Loon Shrine. If they die, he can then bring them back, and I can't do that. Yeah. And then he's got like Render Billion. He's got Mortal Wounds. And so then when I like thought about it afterwards, I was like, yeah, okay. So me thinking I was taking a really strong list, when you actually think about other lists that are in the game, wasn't that strong.
Yeah. Well, Gitz seems to be in a really good spot, doesn't it, at the moment?
Yeah, and also Smorgon, far better player than me, that plays way more than me as well. So I'm not trying to take that away from him either. But it was just an interesting thought experiment, like not an experiment, but like a thought that kind of went through my head after the event that I hadn't really thought about. Like I hadn't gone, this is the list I want to take. Oh, actually, Gitz have this list, but way better. Because I was going to take a list that I say I have. Like I was borrowing Liam's army because I borrowed it at Blood Riot as well. But yeah, it was just quite funny thinking about it then after the fact and going, oh, this is really nowhere near as good as other lists that are actually out there either. But that being said, I think played right, still had the potential to 4-1, and yeah, I 2-3'd, so alas.
Know the feeling.
but yeah, that was my CanCon. It was a really fun weekend. And yeah, we've been having a bit of a chat, and we've probably got a bit of news that I knew going into CanCon that it was probably going to be my last hurrah for a while. So I definitely approached it with that in mind, wanting to sort of do the road trip and hang out and just be pretty cruisy about the gaming side of things. I've been a pretty foot off the pedal for a while now, and I guess we've both had a chat. Obviously, you've the new bub, and we're both, I think, at the point in life where now is the right time to step back a bit and have a bit of a hiatus from not everything Mortally Wounded and sort of everything Warhammer and Age of Sigmar, but certainly from a going to tournaments and being kind of involved in the scene. We're both going to take a step back for, from my perspective, probably at least a couple of years. In all honesty, I'm hoping in the next couple of years that we can hopefully have a second child as well. So you've obviously got your little one now as well. And
Definitely feeling the change in the season in my life. But I'll still carry on, still going to be carrying on like going to the Golden Gamers Guild club meets on a monthly basis. So like very much casual Garage Hammer is probably going to be my mode for a while when I can. I might see if I can get to an event later this year, then that's great. If not, then that's fine too. And probably next year I might be able to get to one. We're still running Slaughter this year. And I foresee, like sitting from here, that we'll continue to run Slaughter.
We'll keep doing Slaughter. That's the thing. Yeah, we'll keep,
because we love it, and we love the community, and you know, everyone who comes to Slaughter, and just the spirit that, and the culture that we've got there is like it's always worth coming back and hanging out and having organizing that event. I'll most likely be on the deck for CanCon next year as well, on the organizing team. Not for me personally, not stepping away completely, but yeah, definitely won't be getting to the 7 or 8 odd events that I got to last year, this year, or next year, probably in the foreseeable future. So
I'll probably be stepping away more than you. Fourth Ed's obviously round the corner, and from my side, knowing how my brain is and everything, and in order for me to actually switch off and not go to tournaments and not have FOMO, like with the timing of everything, I'm fully withdrawing myself from gaming for a few years, and I'm not once we're done with Slaughter this year, Like I'm not reading any of the stuff on fourth ed on the rules. I'm not going to learn the rules of the game. I'm not going to read about the rules of the game, so that way I'm not up at nighttime
going through list
ideas. I'm not playing games on TTS, which then keeps me awake for hours and stuff. I am just fully going to be like, nope, I am just going to focus on my cupboard of gray plastic and focus on the hobby and painting some armies and stuff, so that hopefully when I do come back to the hobby, in all honesty, I'm thinking I'll probably maybe be 3 years out of the game because of the edition cycles, and I don't see the point in coming in for the last year of an edition. So I may skip fourth entirely, and then hopefully when I come back in at fifth, I've got 3-4 maybe more new painted armies that I can use, and then I'll be at a better stage of life with, yeah, not trying to have another little kid and all that stuff, and be ready to kind of go, okay, cool, now I can get back into the hobby. But yeah, we both sort of agreed that we'll keep running Slaughter every year though, like for the community, and also like it's my friends, right? Like I still want to hang out with my mates, and I can spend the weekend without needing to know everything. Obviously, once we hit fourth ed rules, I'm probably going to have to speak to Liam and other TOs for what the player pack needs to be and how the game works, because I ain't going to know. But I can still run a tournament without needing to be as invested as I currently kind of have been. So I think for us both sitting down and podcasting and stuff, there won't be stuff to chat about. And again, it's evenings for you to spend with your new daughter, and then probably a bit down the track.
Sleep and
hopefully
work.
Me having another kid and everything. So
yeah,
I guess yeah, a bit of a sad one. We've been going for a fair few years now, but
we started 2017, I think. Early, it was January 2017.
Yeah.
So we've been going since pretty strong since then. So episode 60 seems like it's a good round number to like draw a line under.
That's how
this,
old I feel.
I feel, I don't know, I don't, I feel a bit, starting to feel a bit nostalgic. definitely, like, I don't think this will be the last podcast we ever record. Like, I think, I from this position, we'll probably, spruik Slaughter on a podcast next year or something like that. And just have a catch up and say hello to everyone on the who listens out in the airwaves, and spruik Mortal Blade and Slaughter. That's probably when you'll next hear from us, maybe on the podcast area. I'll continue like posting Mortal Blade content and reposting that onto the podcast Facebook group, and doing the Instagram thing for Mortal Blade. I'll still be driving all that in the background. It's pretty low drag, pretty low effort sort of thing to do anyway. So so that's kind of we're kind of lifting off there. We've done a really good had a really good run, I think.
This isn't the end. It's definitely
It's just a hiatus. We're just taking a break, taking an indefinite break. Just life shifts and changes. Take away a bit of, I wouldn't say pressure. Like, it's not really pressure doing this podcast. We've been like, I don't know, we haven't been recording as regularly the last year or two. We've never kind of really wanted to be a big driving force flagship podcast sort of thing. Like, we've always kept it as just an extension of our hobby, of our hobby life, and of course of our friendship. You know, like, it's been, you're my best friend. You know, you're definitely one of my best mates. You're up there, and can't wait to see you later in the year. I know that you're planning to come visit with Riley and stuff like that.
So, yeah,
yeah. So life will go on. Real life will go on, and we'll maintain in the background. But did some more hobby time together.
And I'm genuinely, like, the last couple of months as well, like, knowing, like, I don't have to prepare for any tournaments. Like, I think I'm looking forward to hobbying a bit more and finally trying to, like, start on a bunch of armies that I know I've been talking about doing for years and actually going, do you know what? I might just do a test model. I'm actually going to build this conversion. I'm going to do the paint scheme that I've had in my mind for ages, do it to a nice standard and see how I go and be like, cool. I don't have to do this for any particular reason, just because I want to. And yeah, as you say, there's no pressure. Like,
yeah,
not this, yeah, it's always just personal pressure or tournament deadline pressure or
exactly,
oh,
yeah,
I'm bored of playing this army, so I need to do a new army so I can play different lists kind of thing. And yeah, it's yeah, it's good to just chill and I think play some video games and do some other stuff, I think, as well, a bit more. And yeah, it'll be good. So
yeah,
but yeah, for everyone that's been listening to us from the start or just recently or anything, and anyone that's kind of just said hello over the years at events and stuff like that, thank you.
All our guests who've come on the show.
Everyone that's been on the show. It's it's always great. And yeah, if you sort of wonder like, oh, where's Chris these days? You'll know why. I won't see you at events for a while. Maybe some local ones at Queensland, I might be able to pop in and say hi to people still, because that I can do with sort of Riley. I can pop along with him and it's a lot easier to manage because I can look after him and kind of be at the event. Whereas if I'm playing, I can't do that. And so it's a lot more of a commitment, I guess. So it will be easier. So I can still kind of say hi to people, but yeah, formally kind of committing to events and stuff like that. And playing games and everything, I'm fully out. So don't message me. I'm not going to respond. if you're messaging me for a game, Corey, I'm not going to be playing. But if you want to hang out and hobby over Discord or whatever and paint models, hit me up. I'm interested. But yeah.
Cool. Well, signing off for a while. Thanks again for everyone for listening, and yeah, love you all, and we'll see you at Slaughter, and I'll probably see some of you at CanCon next year, if not before, but until then, thank you very much.
Cheers, guys.
You've been listening to Mortally Wounded Podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.